The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world, February 26, 2012. Yes, me, Mike Rupert. I'm back again with you for one more week. Although I do have to say honestly that I am at the point where I have to say now, each succeeding week could be the last one. And I think my guest tonight will agree with me. We have Dmitry Orlov back tonight. I have some news to do before that. But we're going to talk about a lot of important things tonight, like there's no tomorrow, because who knows. We got tremendous feedback from around the world on Facebook over last week's show with Derek Jensen. I want to thank Derek again for coming on. What was interesting, though, in this climate of war that we live in is that the PRN radio archives were taken offline, and iTunes was involved, and a lot of people didn't get to hear the show. PRN stepped up to the plate. I'm not quite sure how that played out, but the last I heard, they were calling lawyers. But this is how nasty the world is now, and it's apparent that the flow of information is critical to everyone. The battle that's being waged now is the battle for human consciousness. We are on that field for sure. I want to thank all of my Facebook friends this week. You have just, we are really developing a good network across many platforms with CollapseNet and being able to tweet and share, and we're trying to maximize all of this. But I want to give a special thanks to all of my loyal friends on Facebook who also are scanning the world for stories have made some very good catches. One is, this is a great piece of good, really, really good news. It's not a fairy tale. Seattle is to build the nation's first food forest, and we have this on the homepage of CollapseNet right now. And Seattle has taken a large public park, and food forests are a form of permaculture where literally one approach is to use seed balls to throw clusters of kind of related seeds and plants that do well together. Make each other stronger, and a food forest can literally produce in a very small space enormous amounts of edible food, very healthy, very organic, and Seattle is a great place to do that. I read this story today, and I actually cried. As I put the comment up on the homepage at CollapseNet with the homepage breaking news story, the 100th monkey approaches. And I give thanks. I mean, so many people will live because of this, and the fact that other cities and people will share this story will help the lights go on for a great many. And here's one other story that somebody put up on Facebook. Wyoming doomsday bill advances in State House. Huffington Post, here's the quote. Wyoming lawmakers pushed forward legislation to explore how the state would respond if the country fell into economic and political turmoil. The so-called Doomsday Bill, passed in the Wyoming House on Friday, would create a special task force to study ways the state would handle such crises as food shortage to a government shutdown. Some provisions that will be explored include Wyoming forming its own army and issuing its own currency. It's official now, I guess. This is my comment that there is even governmental recognition of zombie apocalypse. No shit. The term was actually in the story, and it's in the government documents. So there you go, folks. You know, I don't know what it takes. Some folks are starting to talk about this now, and this is another major milestone for all of the 100th, for all of us. That 100th monkey is really sniffing around here somewhere. So I have a special thanks tonight for all of you who have responded to CollapseNet's call for help. You know that we had some very major orchestrated governmental type cyber attacks, and we had to switch, and we went off 2 months the people who make Collapse Network had gone without their very meager pay. We only have them on as independent contractors, and some were getting $250 a week, and some, a little more. But for some, it was all they had, like for so many now. And everybody has worked for 2 months, almost everybody, without pay. But thanks to all of you, but especially to one friend, and Collapse Net and I have had some other great benefactors and gift givers and angels along the way, but there's one who I really want to thank, and he's my good friend Sean Yim in Hong Kong. He's probably listening tonight, and I send my deepest affection to his family and to him, and as a result of his generosity and everyone else, all of the people who have gone without money at Collapse Net to keep kicking ass like we're doing, have been caught up, and that's a great feeling for me and for our Chief Operating Officer, Wes Miller. So thanks to all of you. We're still in here. Now, a summary of what's happening in oil prices. Now I can just hear Dimitri kind of starting to grin in the background. I like to torture him this way. Summary of what's happening in oil prices. This is the quote of the year. There's a writer named John Robb from the Global Gorilla. We had him up on the world's new news desk today. But, quote, this is shaping up to be an amazingly violent global heart attack. Exactly. It is. Peak oil has been so abundantly and overwhelmingly confirmed in spades. Press TV from Iran even ran a clip this week that was almost exactly like the analysis I had given on peak oil. The U.S. is in full retreat overseas on all fronts. Two American officers were assassinated inside the Interior Ministry. Taliban claimed credit, but it was a member of the Afghan military. It's open season on Americans. Seven more hurt today. Our foreign policy stuff is failing across the board, et cetera, et cetera. We all know that. But oil prices are skyrocketing. They're increasing faster than has ever been recorded. They are the highest ever for this time of year, 426 here in Sebastopol. What is it where you are? Highest ever in Europe, and that's, of course, killing everything and everybody. We are at that point. From the movie Collapse, where I said, it will come when oil spikes again and nobody can afford to buy that oil. Everything will just shut down. That's where we are. And in Greece, here's a quote from a story we had on the World News Desk. As per the new agreement, Greece's lenders will have the right to seize the country's gold reserves in the event of any default. Greek gold reserves are estimated to be more than 100 tons. Also hard-hitting to its national interest is the fact that all future issues of Greek bonds will be governed in English and Luxembourg courts, conditions more favorable to the bondholders. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody around the world, and we know now that our listeners come from all over the world. We know that our listeners here and the people who come to us on CollapseNet are often world leaders. We see that. We know that. We have seen all the responses. A nation is being dismembered and eaten alive in front of 7 billion pairs of eyes. Even a herd of deer, cattle, or sheep is smart enough to run and to seek shelter when one of its members is taken by a wolf or a mountain lion. We are the 99%. This shit has got to end. One more little thing here before we get down to Dimitri in a second. The yen, and I've been telling you on CollapseNet for a long time that Japan is mortally wounded. Well, that Japan's falling over moment is right now. And the yen is absolutely tanking as Japanese manufacturers flee the country. They've got another reactor now leaking. They've lost all of this. But Japan is now hobbled for the first time in 30 years, running a trade surplus. It's manufacturers that can't, hobbled by a lack of electricity are fleeing. Food crops as far away as Okinawa, way down south, are now contaminated with radiation. And I wrote, this is all being coordinated and choreographed according to a timetable. Dimitri and I will be discussing that tonight. Europe will go down because of debt. The U.S. will go down over oil and debt, and Japan will take the huge leap downward at about the same time, which looks to be between March and May of this year. Iraq is being ripped apart by Al-Qaeda and the Saudis, CIA, Mossad, and MI6. It's a civil war. The fault lies in the boundaries that were drawn in Iraq on the map by Winston Churchill at the end of the First World War. The only rational approach that adheres with natural law is to, as best as possible, allow the pre-existing cultural regions to congeal in whatever forms emerge, but correctly aligned geographically and historically. As collapse proceeds, geography will trump everything. And Chicago, setting the stage, Occupy is coming back very strong. It needs to. Of course, the world's, you know, also rioting and everything else. Everybody's going to be going crazy here next week, I think. But Chicago, NATO and the G8 are meeting in May. And NATO and the G8 in the same place at the same time. That's a gauntlet thrown, and it really looks like everybody's going to be responding. That's the place to be come May. However, there's a part of me that is wondering tonight if we have until May before a set of conditions preventing travel or anything else comes down crashing around us. But that's the subject, because all of these things now seem to be happening at the same time when many of them should have happened a while ago. So we need some help talking about that. And tonight we have Dmitry Orlov. You all know him. He's a Russian-American engineer. He's a writer. He moved to the U.S. at the age of 12, but he was in Russia, the USSR, for the collapse. He has a B.S. and an M.A. in applied linguistics, he's an amazing writer. In 2005, 2006, Dmitry wrote a number of Orlov of articles comparing the collapse preparedness of the U.S. and the Soviet Union, and we were the first to publish him at From the Wilderness, I believe, in June of 2005. You can find Dmitry at Club. He's the author of Reinventing Collapse, and he's Dmitry Orlov. You can find him at it's the Russian thing. You can find him at cluborlov.blogspot.com. If there's anybody else I wanted to hang out with tonight, it's Dmitry. Welcome back, dude.
Mike, good to be on your show.
How tired are you, man?
Oh, I'm not tired. I'm in fine shape.
No, good. Well, I've been working hard this week trying to keep up with everything that's going on. But I saw you recently on Max Kaiser, and I had started saying back around August, when it was obvious that Greece was going to default, it had to default, and we have seen this choreographed dog and pony, now cliched, dance going on. And a great many things led me to conclude that everything was being choreographed. Then Zero Hedge found some documents from Goldman Sachs that said all of these great big events are being choreographed. And then I saw you on Max Kaiser make pretty much the same statement. Can you expand on that more?
Yeah, I don't think that it's actually choreography. I think that, you know, there is too much incompetence in what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that that there is this process of knocking countries over. It's what's called the IMF riot. It's a particular way of destroying countries that the global financial elite has been practicing on third world countries. The interesting thing is that this pattern is now spreading to Europe, Europe.
Okay.
And eventually will engulf the entire planet. But the thing is that you can't just have Cayman Islands and the rest of the world in flames. That doesn't work. So at some point, it'll stop working. The interesting thing for me is to figure out when that will happen.
Well, there has been a dramatic acceleration, from my perspective, of the rate of collapse over the last 2 months or so, which seems to be much more aggressive now that I'm seeing a power shift, a massive power shift from west to east, and the complete full awareness of peak oil, while the U.S. can't see it.
I think that, you know, the pattern that I predicted that was borne out to some extent is that every time the global economy attempts to grow, oil prices will spike.
Right.
And then cause another round of recession. Well, I believe I'll have to retract that, because there's no sign that, you know, the global economy is trying to grow, but the oil prices are spiking anyway. So I think the new normal is that if the global economy is collapsing too slowly, then oil prices spike. It has to collapse faster now.
Oh, only, Okay, take that for a second. If it's collapsing too slowly, for whom? For what?
For the oil-producing nations.
Aha, okay. So this would mesh perfectly with an article we had from the Wilderness in about 2002, I think, by Dale Allen Pfeiffer, who's the guy who introduced me to you, saying that as we got into this stage of peak oil, that OPEC would become dominant, and I think Iran is absolutely proving that, because number one, the whole world has proved that there is nowhere else to go to replace that oil. The Saudis are about to be exposed, but Iran's clearly flexing its power. So what would that be like, though, if every OPEC member started flexing its power?
Well, I think they all are to one extent or another. It's just that some of them are very much still under America's heel. It's the ones that have retained their sovereignty, separate from Washington, that, like Iran, that are able to do this. And the others are just basically staying mum. But, the Iranians are sort of the replacement for Alan Greenspan, who used to say something and then the markets would respond. Now the Iranians are the ones who say something in the
market. That's beautiful. Okay. That makes very good sense. But now I'm also seeing, too, as the U.S. has tried and failed, and as it has in every other one of its schemes lately, to hurt Iran by denying it access to dollars for trading oil. And now we have an Iranian oil bourse open. And India and Iran are trading, so everybody's moving away from the dollar, which I have perceived as weakening dollar, also accelerating the price in the price spike in oil as the dollar weakens.
Well, that's like saying, you've been a bad boy, no more financial poison for you. Not very effective, I'm afraid.
To me, and I don't know if you agree with this, but I'm seeing a massive power shift from west to east.
Well, I think the power is evaporating. I don't think that it's really shifting anywhere. It's just that nobody is really getting their way. None of the actors are getting their way.
That's
it's
true.
It's very striking in the case of the United States, where it's just one embarrassment after another. But I wouldn't say that anyone else is doing much better.
Okay, so what senses do you have for what's imminent then? I see gas prices continuing just to go insane all of next week, and this is going to be much more devastating than it was in 08. What else do you see?
Well, I'm not very good at these sorts of short-term bets, but I think that there's a psychological shift happening, which is that the United States is getting hit from all sides.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody is going to pile on, and so foreign policy will cease to exist in the case of the United States. It will simply be reacting to one little crisis after another, and there'll be too many of them, and the State Department and the rest of the bureaucracy will simply get overwhelmed, unable to control the message, unable to control what's happening on the ground, and just basically repatriating people from one country after another. And I predicted that would start happening quite a while ago, and the question is, how chaotic is that going to be?
Yeah, okay. The repatriation thing, I think, is very important. I think I touched on that, too, with some of what I was saying about Iraq a while ago. There's a lot of boundaries and borders in the world that were drawn for no reason having anything to do with political or with natural reality, with actual reality. They were drawn for political and economic reasons. And it is looking like, I think you said on Max Kaiser that something like we would have all of the stages happen at once. But political collapse looks to be like pretty imminent as well. What do you think?
Well, it's probably going to continue happening to one country after another, but the Libya pattern seems to have choked on Syria at this point. Just talking to Syrians I know, I asked them, well, there's all this turmoil in the news. How about in Syria itself? Is there anything going on? And they said, we have families in Damascus. There's nothing going on. Absolutely nothing. There's one part of the country that is sort of foreign occupied. The government lost control of it, and now they're fighting back and retaking their own territory. That's what's going on. So it's all of this sort of fake stage-managed pseudo-revolution that's supposed to be happening, and it's bogged down. The thing is that, Russia and China screamed bloody murder when it was happening in Libya.
Right.
But they didn't do much about it. Now they're actually doing something.
Oh, they have both put their foot down, and I'm convinced that's because Syria and Iran have a mutual defense treaty, and the order of battle to attack Iran has to be to achieve regime change in Syria first. So the line has been clearly drawn in the sand by the Soviets, the Russians, the Chinese, and Assad knows that he's not going anywhere. I wanted to ask your take on, we've had some massive demonstrations, anti-Putin demonstrations in Moscow with Russians braving 20 below weather, linking arms, tens of thousands turning out. What's your take on all that?
Well, there's a good side to Putin and there's a bad side to him. The good side is that he's actually managed to rejuvenate the country to a large extent. Kept it together, under control, dealt with some internal situations, was a bit rough on some people, but he's held it together, and the country is much improved because of his efforts. That's the good part. The bad part is that he's a kleptocrat, and he presides over an entire group of kleptocrats. Some of them do actually believe in Russia, believe that Russia has a future, few of them, but many of them made this bad bet that by expatriating everything that they've stolen, putting it in Swiss banks, buying real estate in London, and putting their children through Western schools and colleges, will somehow get them another lease on life because they didn't believe in Russia. They thought that by setting themselves up so that they're ready to flee, they'll gain something. And that could turn out to be a self-fulfilling prophecy in their case. But it was a very bad bet because I don't think Europe is much more stable than Russia at this point. And in fact, it'd be better off.
I would say less.
Yes, I would say they've made a bad bet, and now they have to make amends. Now they have to fix things. It's not clear how far along they are in realizing that they've made this really terrible bet. But I hope that they move along.
Well, I admire Russia. I visited Russia, and the Russians are very no bullshit. We can say that on internet radio. Mm-hmm. In their foreign policy, and I find that very, very reassuring. We're on tonight with Dmitry Orlov on the Lifeboat Hour at the Progressive Radio Network. Really enjoying being here, watching our numbers expand, and having really good results. We play a song at our nightclub at the end of the world every week. We have the perfect one tonight is Gasoline's What Is It Where You Are? $4.26 where I am, $5 in L.A., $6 soon enough. That's just a part of what's going on. So tonight from New White Trash, here is one of the songs I co-wrote and share the lead with Doug Lewis on. It's called Free Fall.
up against the wall again. You're the new white trash. 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 When your back's up against the wall again, you're the new white trash. You're the new white trash.
Yeah, it does. That's a new white trash. That's free. The song is Free Fall. You can find all 37 originals at www.newwhitetrash.com. Gotta have a little, you know, just gotta have some music here to make things go along. So we're here tonight with Dmitri Orlov from cluborlov.blogspot.com. His latest essay, characteristic Dmitri Orlov title, a pile of straw at the bottom of a cliff. What's that all about, Dmitri?
Well, it's based on a Russian saying, which is, if I knew where I'd fall down, I'd put down some straw there. It's basically to get the point across that it's ridiculous to try to prepare for the completely unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
But I use that facetiously in the sense that, well, we could possibly prepare for the completely expected, so why don't we? And one of the things that we can foresee, we can study using mathematics and science, is the fact that the end of the fossil fuel age is not going to be slow and gentle. It will be more of a cliff dive.
We're on tonight with Dmitri Orlov. It's time for Station Break at the bottom of the hour. If you want to ask Dmitri a question, the number is 1-888-874-4888. Or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. 888-874-4888. We are going into the station break. We'll come back. We've already got some questions for the wonderful Dmitri Orlov. We'll see you in a second. Now belong to Diane Patterson. The song is High Sierra Morning, which has kind of become an anthem for me, and that's going to fade out. Yeah, there we go. And it's a wonderful song. We're going to play it in full again on the show. It's it kind of gives a whole new perspective and a whole new way of looking at what's happening, because on the one hand we have the horrendous, devastating heart attacks, if you will, that are happening all over the world in various forms and various places. But there are very strong signs of an awakening and a change of consciousness, with which Dmitri Orlov and I will hope to see come about by some means, crooker means. Dmitri, we're back. We have an email from Windermere Assassin, a.k.a. Lee Deathcare Nelson, who's a great friend of ours on Facebook and everywhere around, and he's a regular listener to the show from London. What a week, buddy. He writes, sheer craziness on a global scale, and here in the UK, things are slipping down and hill fast. We have seen the possibility of doctors going on strike over government pension changes. I never even knew the doctors could strike, but then I've never really paid attention to current affairs until I watched a movie about a guy in a chair, lots of cigarettes, and plenty of eye-opening revelations on the state of our world. So when our rather camp good friend, Lee was very much involved in Occupy London, it talks about Joe Rogan. I'm looking to see if there's a question. Okay, this is a Dmitri Orlov question. I'm going to come down to the end. I know everyone can't be saved, and that's upsetting to say the least, but our friend is such a lovely person. This is a great friend of his. We want them to wake up and smell the coffee, but he just wants his cocoa instead. Since when is more sleep been the cure for a nightmare of epic nastiness? Since when has more sleep been a cure for anything, Dimitri?
Well, the people who do the best are the people who care the least, it seems, in bad situations.
Mm.
You know, there are a few people, that very small percentage of the overall population, who can think strategically and position themselves ahead of time and actually do it right. Do it well. Most don't. Most don't even bother, and most shouldn't even try. Most people don't even have the ability, the resources and whatever else it takes. But what people do on a tactical level is really often unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like climbing up a greased pole and running away from a lion. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know that you'd be capable of it until the moment arrives.
And you do it, yes.
It's a bad idea to make bets in terms of who will succeed and who will fail. People should be ready to surprise themselves.
Absolutely. And there's going to be a lot of surprises, both good and bad. We have a first-time caller tonight, George from Orlando. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, Mike.
Hi, man.
Thanks for taking my call. Been a big fan of yours for forever, 10 years at least. Now, what I noticed, though, recently I live in a retirement community in Florida called the Villages. The price of gas cans doubled in a week, as if almost someone suspecting that we're going to have gas problems going forward. At all the Walmarts, all the Ace Hardwares, everywhere you go, the gas can that was $7.50 is now $14.84. And I was a little perturbed about that, and I was almost freaked out how someone can anticipate that the people would be demanding gas cans in the near future.
There's a lot of people buying gas cans, I would think.
But I was just really shocked that the price almost doubled, almost overnight, within a week.
Well, the lights are starting to go on. What kind of panic buying would you expect to see?
Well, actually, that's a beautiful pattern right there. That's American retail at its best. What better way to sell more gas cans than to hike up the price of them? Everybody sees the price of gas cans going up, they talk about it, and they go out and they buy a gas can before the price will go up some more. It's beautiful.
And here we start the vicious cycle. Dimitri, I just got a very disturbing email, and I want to share it with you. Bill sent this in, and he said this is a link to a story, U.S. to announce aerial blockade on Syria. And it links to a Ynet, which is an Israeli publication. They're solid. The headline does say, U.S. to announce aerial blockade on Syria. U.S. readies for possibility of intervention without U.N. resolution. Sharak al-Aswat reports, citing U.S. military official plan to include humanitarian aid to Syrian refugees on Turkey's border. And but the first paragraph qualifies. The Pentagon is readying for the possibility of intervention in Syria. Every time I see this, because to me it is so clearly, if there is an attempt at regime change on Syria, and I bet every last nickel I have on it, that it will start a global nuclear Armageddon. It's the grand screw it moment of all time. But every time I see a story like this, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, and I lose my appetite. Dimitri, what do you think would happen if the U.S. acted unilaterally now to attack Syria?
I'm not sure, and I'm not sure that they would. They have to justify their budget and their existence. So they have to act dangerous. You know, if they don't act dangerous, then their budgets don't get approved. So they're constantly in this posturing mode, but you know, everybody knows that in many ways they're just sitting ducks. They're all over the place in many parts of the world. There's just so many ways to screw them that people are taking advantage of, because why bother? Why attack a country that's busy screwing itself?
Exactly.
So
and doing a great job of it, too.
And doing it real fast. So most of the world is likely to just sit back and the worst that might happen, and you know this might actually be one of those game-changing events, is if there's a lot of technology now to take out an American aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese have developed a ballistic missile system to do it, against which there's no defense. Mm-hmm. The Russians have developed a supersonic torpedo to do it, mm-hmm. sold it to the Iranians. So there are many ways to knock out aircraft carriers. So an interesting thing might be if that happened. That would be a very, very much a game-changing thing, because that would change America's, I don't know what it is, but the idea that they can project force wherever they want.
In the meantime, we have had over the course of the last 2.5-3 months since U.S. helos killed 24 Pakistani soldiers well inside Pakistan, and Pakistan shut off overland supply routes to the NATO troops in Afghanistan. The Russians said only non-lethal aid over convoy overland. Airbase resupply was denied. The British have announced an early pullout, and just a couple of days ago, the Germans announced they are withdrawing from Afghanistan, which is important because the German command under ISAF is the northern provinces, which are Taliban stronghold. Germany is pulling out. Britain and Germany clearly see the U.S. Getting its ass kicked and are getting their people out on time. What do you think the chances are of a lost legion there?
Well, that's happened before. That's interesting. An interesting part of history. The British bled all the way out of Afghanistan when they lost it. And if it happened to the Americans, well, you know, it would be part of a pattern. Afghanistan is the place where empires go to die.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. It's very hard to figure out what compels them to do it. It's just that it's there. It's the center of Eurasia. It's the focal point. Nobody has been able to conquer it or hold it down. It's a worthless patch of land that's really impossible to attack, even with all the modern weaponry. So if the United States follows the example of the British and then the Russians, it would just really show that there's something at work. There's some principle conquering the mindset of empires. It's almost like empires are like insects
mm-hmm.
drawn to a flame, that there isn't actually any sort of a rational process behind them, which is very interesting.
We have lived through, of course, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1980, which turned out in the big fight with the Mujahideen, geographic counterbalance to the Contra War in Central America. The Russians left, I would think, with their tail between their legs, certainly having, well, you can categorize that. What do you think Russia's attitude would be toward Afghanistan now? Because Russia pays very close attention to the near abroad. Mother Russia keeps her chicks very close, and I think it's a very wise policy for her. But how does Russia treat what's happening in Afghanistan now?
Well, Russia has a difficult time dealing with the Muslim populations to the south. A lot of them are moving in. They're migrating into Russia itself. And there's a lot of ethnic strife in cities in Russia right now because of the burgeoning Muslim populations there. So it's a little too close for comfort for a lot of Russians, not just the people in the government, but
mm-hmm.
just like people everywhere resent the fact that there are Muslims everywhere, that they seem to be losing their country, losing the character of their country. And so there will be some politicians pandering to that. There will be some hot spots here and there flaring up. And it can turn ugly in places. I don't think that there's going to be any sort of a great geopolitical change. I think the higher birth rate of the Muslim populations is basically determining the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And not much can be done about it. Most of those people are living quite peaceably inside Russia.
All right. Now, when you talk about Muslim birth rates, and there are, I remember it from the wilderness, we did a lot of work, even Stan Goff did work on the resource shortages that are just horrendous throughout the near Middle East. But we also see this massive Shia-Sunni conflict in Iraq, which my take is that the U.S. and the CIA and the Saudis are pushing the Sunnis, and everybody else in the world is favoring the Shias, but it is tragic to see that. What are the dangers around an Iraqi civil war right now?
Well, I've always thought that Iraq is actually three different countries mm-hmm. that got mixed together. There's the Kurd portion, there's the Sunni portion, and there's the Shia portion, and they've been coerced together. And only a strong man like Saddam Hussein could hold it together. So they'll probably just go their separate ways. I think these borders will become more or less notional.
I hope so.
And that the populations will recongeal in some other form, probably more geographically compact.
Yeah, because one of the things that scares me is we have all this huge global attention focused on the fault lines around Syria and Iran and Saudi Arabia, but then you also have this very bitter feud between Shia and Sunni, between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And below that, you have all of these other multi-generational feuds just between smaller ethnic groups, Hashemite, whatever, in the region who lament, you know, when somebody from the artificially drawn country of Syria took some land away from an artificially drawn country called Lebanon. You know what I'm saying? And what I'm afraid of is that the Middle East might kind of just go berserk on its own.
It's the post-colonial pattern all over the place. It happens in so many places in the world. You know, the British Empire really excelled at turning people against their neighbors. And mm-hmm. That's how they rule, divide and conquer. And so that festers for a really long time. And sometimes it blows up. It can, you know, these synthetic countries that, you know, basically were created by, you know, Churchill's pencil on a ruler on a map. Could only be held together by brute force, and when that is lacking for whatever reason, then things start to disintegrate rather rapidly.
Yeah, and so as we look all around the world, I mean, here in the States as well, and you know, at Europe, at anywhere, and all the places where there's massive civil unrest, and that would include especially India, Pakistan, Afghanistan now, and South America's doing some nice revolts now too. With all of this, I mean, there's a berserk moment. You had coined the term about the aha moment, when everybody goes, aha, this is all bullshit, kind of like. And I'm worried about the berserk moment when everybody just kind of loses sanity all at once. And I'm wondering how close we are to that.
Well, I think that, you know, parts of the U.S. are definitely close to a nervous breakdown. Parts of Europe are beyond that point. I think Greece is far beyond a nervous mm-hmm. breakdown. And I think this will be the year when, you know, it will be sort of like the late 1960s, where the entire planet briefly loses it.
Now, you didn't see much like this in the Soviet Union, but I was here in the U.S. in 1968. I was a sophomore in high school when the Democratic Party had their convention in Chicago at the height of the Vietnam War, and the SDS and the Weather Underground had surfaced, and Chicago was an absolute bloodbath. Now I'm looking here at NATO and G8 and Occupy, and like everybody's going to Chicago. I think it's starting May 5th, and I'm pretty sure I'm going too, because that seems to be a showdown on a high noon. I have no way to predict what could happen, but I do think it's kind of interesting that the president's first chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, is now the mayor of Chicago, and the president's second chief of staff has just announced he's leaving to go back to Chicago. So that tells me the White House has something very, very huge planned for that time around May. Do you have any sense for what might come out of that of Chicago?
Yeah, well, Chicago is a very special place. I mean, look at Rod Blagojevich. He went to prison for a long time for doing something completely legal. You know, he got arrested on a technicality, which is he lost a vacant seat. You know, you're not allowed to sell vacant seats. They have to be occupied by a senator or a congressman before you can sell them. So that was just like he violated a little tribal taboo or something. But, you know, that's where the tribe is, and that's where they will go to their doom, I guess.
I'm wondering what's going to happen if you mix all the cops that are going to be there, a very energized and active Occupy movement, NATO, G8, and Tea Party, I think, and so not, you know, throw Ron Paul into the mix, and you know, it's like something has to happen there. I can almost feel that. I'm kind of wondering what's going to happen between now and then, because I'm a little more concerned about immediate events.
Well, I'm wondering, too. One thing I can tell you is I'll be nowhere near there.
Yeah, but if, you know, my commitment to Occupy, if I can be of service there, I will. I think you're probably smarter than I am. How's your sailboat, man?
Oh, it's fine. It's just fine. It's a whole different subject area. I got an email yesterday that I was very excited about. Sven Ervind, the Swedish guy who circumnavigated the planet in a small boat, I don't know how many times,
mm-hmm.
went around Cape Horn in a 20-foot boat. He wrote to me, and so now we're corresponding about boats. And it's completely separate. It's a different world onto itself.
What will it take to make you cast off from where you are in Massachusetts?
I don't know. I don't actually make predictions like that. But the thing is, I could cast off any time and come mm-hmm. back later. You know?
I have a lot to learn from hanging out with Russian experience. I'm too American in many ways. Because what was that line you said before about Russians wouldn't care about? What was that? It was a great line.
Oh, the prevailing religion of Russia is something called Dauphinism, or at least was, not giving a rat's ass.
Yes. And that's kind of the way you have to be. And that's kind of the way we are going to have to learn how to be.
Not caring is actually very important. Caring about certain things is, of course, essential, but not in general, not caring about a great many things that don't directly concern you is a skill.
We just posted a collapse net on the yellow bar up at the top recently, what I call the ultimate zombie litmus test. It's our friend Richard Heinberg's new video out of Post Carbon, and I forget the other filmmaker's name, but it was very well done, but it was explained so clearly. My attitude of that after watching it was, hey, show this to the person you love, ask them to watch it once with their heart, and swear you'll never ask them again, and if after watching it they don't get what's happening, get a divorce, leave them, disown the children, whatever, I'm having a strong sense that and I'm seeing a lot of people this way.
Well, just to get away
from anybody who doesn't get it right now.
Well, let me give you a counterexample. What if I showed that video to my cat, and the cat reacted the way I would expect the cat to react? Would I disown the cat? No, of course not.
No.
So I think most people are in that category, same category as my cat. So
exactly.
I will still care about them, whether or not they appreciate the finer points of what they saw in that video, if they watch it, because there's nothing they can do about that. There's nothing useful that they can do with that information.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes to acting, if the cat has the ability to prevent you from doing something that you needed to do, that wouldn't stop you, would it?
I don't know. You owe an allegiance to people around you that goes beyond utility or keeping safe. And that's probably more important. The thing is that, you know, surviving dishonorably is worse than dying honorably.
Oh, absolutely agree with that. But that describes the horns of the dilemma that's going to be facing a great many people, and that is facing a great many people right now.
And they can't abandon those people who are close to them, who depend on them, whether or not those people actually understand what's going on.
And that's going to make for some very spicy living for a lot of people. That's why it's important to know that the ones in your lifeboat are ones that you can really count on, that you're all focused on. I wouldn't let anybody into my lifeboat unless I was prepared to care for them. As a crewman, though, who didn't share the same focus on what the imperatives were and why they were important.
Well, yes. I mean, I think that's an important point. Don't throw in your lot with people you're lukewarm about.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's an important piece of advice.
Yeah. It doesn't happen as much as it used to, but people are still throwing some of these absolutely ridiculous headlines about bailouts and stuff. There's this talk about this now $2 trillion thing from IMF. I mean, I'm tired of talking about it. I have interpreted all of the press stories about Grease and Apostle and all the dog and pony shows as just delaying things, with a Greek default being inevitable. Do you think that's the agenda for all these continued kabuki performances, or what is it?
Well, at some point, somebody looks at the cash in their hand and decides to spend it, because when will be the next chance to spend it? There'll be basically it's sort of the way the collapse rolls is your opportunities to spend your money usefully dwindle over time.
Mm-hmm.
Because less stuff is getting made, less stuff is being shipped.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that you can buy is lower and lower quality all the time. So at some point, money becomes less useful than stuff. And when that happens, the price of stuff skyrockets, and then all of this financial manipulation, basically money printing exercises, you know, keeping the flow of money going, stop working. And it's it's a sea change. It's something that happens. It's a mental flip. And that's when you go from deflation to hyperinflation.
Which a great many people are seeing is pretty imminent. I mean, the dollar is weakening very rapidly, and many other avenues, little fire exits have been opened to allow wealth to flee out of dollars. I think that the collapse of the dollar, coinciding with or fed by the geopolitical collapse of the U.S. thanks to its Three Stooges foreign policy, is going to be extremely fast, and I'm thinking hyperinflation probably maybe by this summer. I mean, leaving aside the date issue, it does feel like we're just a breath away from it, right?
Well, it could happen at any time. It's a panic, and I wouldn't want to predict a panic.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of actually triggering one is abhorrent. So I'd rather let it flow the way it will by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a big question in my mind. Where does wealth go to die?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's all pieces of paper. People looking at each other saying, "Are you good? Can you come up with the goods on this, or is this just a piece of paper?"
I hope it's kind of like the Wicked Witch of the East.
Well, yes, there's the I am melting moment that we're all waiting for.
Yes.
All these rich people turn out to be rather helpless.
The Admirable Crichton, that was a play I did a long time ago in high school. Again, they have stocked up on hard goods, land, all their survival gear, their guns. They have their castles and their castle keeps. They think stocked. We'll see how that plays. I don't know. I want to kind of spend like the last few minutes on some of the upbeat notes. I opened the show tonight with this story about the food forest in Seattle, and to me that feels like a cosmic move, just a major moment in history. Are you that optimistic, or am I just looking for something to be happy about?
I think that there are little islands of people in the United States that are just amazing, you know, and they make up for the rest. This gigantic feckless population driving around in SUVs and pickup trucks, going from one retail outlet to another, living in homes around which nothing edible grows,
mm-hmm.
you know, going to the supermarket and buying mostly meat products, mostly from factory farms that make them sick. You know, there's that pattern, right, and it's prevalent. And then there are pockets of really awesome stuff going on
mm-hmm.
alongside it. So what people have to do is look for those pockets of awesomeness and make them bigger.
That's been my experience since the movie came out, Collapse. I mean, I got to travel all over the country. I got to Massachusetts, Minnesota, Vermont, California, Washington, Oregon, and visiting these amazing little islands, which I have called arcs, if you will, which is a whole bunch of lifeboats tied together. And I really think that the number of these places around the world is growing. We see it at CollapseNet every week. Our traffic is increasing, and we've been able to improve the site thanks to the help from all you guys out there. And I'm hopeful because I'm not the only one seeing what appears to be a looming change of consciousness. When you have the Wyoming state government passing a doomsday bill, acknowledging everything that you and I were predicting back in 2005, that's kind of a watershed moment to me. What do we take away from seeing things like that, Dimitri?
Well, we take away the fact that there are things worth doing. We shouldn't just sit on the sidelines. We should get involved.
Mm-hmm. They feel good, and they're fun.
Yeah.
Dimitri Orlov, thank you so much, man, for coming back on the show again. You're an icon in the movement. You're a good friend, and you're one of the lights out there that I love being on this planet with. I want to tip the hat tonight to Matt Simmons. It was revealed this week that there was very likely a third well leaking down at Deepwater Horizon, which is what Matt was screaming about before his untimely death, which I do believe now, and I will say it, there's nothing left to lose with murder. But we make good friends along the way, and Dimitri's one of the best guys out here. Check him out. Follow him. Dimitri, we are going to get you back soon, and thanks for being with us again tonight.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. All right, to everybody out there, I'll be back next week. We got some good things happening, and I will be on this. I expect a lot of big news this week, and we'll keep you abreast of it at CollapseNet, and you can find me here, God willing, on the River Don't Rise, on the Lifeboat Hour at PRN.FM next week. Until then, I'll see you.